This is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on community and independent radio stations nationwide. Public opinion is deeply shaped by what we read, what we see, what we hear. It's why the role of a free press is critical to a democracy. Only a well-informed electorate can best govern itself. But given the skewed coverage of critically important stories in our corporate-dominated media landscape, it's no wonder that our democracy remains in deep trouble. Each year, the group Project Censored gathers together the most censored or undercovered stories of the past year and edits them into a book. And today we'll learn what some of those stories are. Andy Lee Roth is Associate Director of Project Censored. He coordinates the project's validated independent news program, has co-edited several editions of the Censored Yearbook with Mickey Huff, including the newest book, State of the Free Press 2023. Welcome to the program, Andy.
Thanks so much, Sonali. It's a pleasure to join you on Rising Up.
So give our audience an overview, if they haven't heard of Project Censored, what this is about. This is not a new endeavor. You and Mickey have been doing this for many years. And sadly, it sort of gets more relevant year by year for you to cover stories that are censored. So what exactly is it?
Well, with the corporate media's narrow definitions of who and what count as newsworthy, I guess Mickey Huff, the project's director, and I and those of us who work at Project Censored have good job security, because every year there's no shortage of important stories that the corporate news media either marginalize, distort, or blockade altogether. And that's basically been the aim of Project Censored since it was founded at Sonoma State University in California in 1976 by Carl Jensen. The goal has always been to try to bring wider public attention to important stories that have been given short shrift by the corporate news media. And so from the start, that project has been a student-driven project. This is something, when the project was established in 1976, there were very few media watchdog organizations in the United States. We are one of the oldest running such organizations. Now, thankfully and happily, there are many, many more organizations doing important work to point out bias, slant, spin, outright propaganda. But Project Censored remains distinctive for the central role played by students. Every year, so some of the stories that we'll be talking about today, all the stories on this year and all 47 of the project's annual lists are initially identified and vetted primarily by college and university students from across the country.
And so these are stories that never make it into the corporate media, or make it into a very limited form in the corporate media, or maybe a biased form in the corporate media?
That the answer to that question, Sonali, depends on a kind of case-by-case basis. Some of these stories that we'll talk about today have not been covered at all in the corporate news media. So that would be the in some ways, the most stark, strong form of this sort of filtering process that we'll talk about. But others are covered, but covered in a way that shrouds or makes unclear the full impact or import of the story. And in some ways, these stories are the most pernicious of all. This type of story is the most pernicious of all, because people will come and say to us, oh, well, I saw that story covered in the Washington Post. That's not a censored story. And we'll say, but did you compare, as the students working on these stories do as part of their critical media literacy training, they compare and contrast the stories for what's included in the independent coverage of the topic, as opposed to what's featured or highlighted in the corporate news coverage. And there often are striking differences, especially around solutions to systemic problems, which far more frequently are covered in independent news coverage of the topics the project tracks compared to the corporate news coverage.
So let's talk about some of these stories. There are so many of them, and I thought we would start with one topic that there was a time that the corporate media didn't cover at all, and that was climate change. climate change used to be something that the independent media would, you know, constantly be harping about. I've been doing this for 20 years, and I remember we would have regular stories about climate change, and the corporate media, when it covered it, it would generally be a sort of both sides story. Well, yes, some scientists say this and other scientists say that. Now, there is general agreement that climate change is very real. The corporate media has caught on, albeit late. But what aspects of the story about climate change are they not covering?
One of the major aspects that ends up being our top story for the 2021-2022 news cycle is the extent to which the fossil fuel industry is subsidized by governments around the world. I'm going to give you a stunning figure that it'll take a moment. We should all do a collective inhale while there's still breathable air to inhale. A study by the International Monetary Fund published in September of 2021 found that globally, the fossil fuel industry is receiving subsidies of $11 million per minute. So in the time that, since you introduced this topic, and the time I've finished giving my first quick answer about this story, ExxonMobil, BP, et cetera, will have received some $11 million in subsidies from various governmental agencies in nations around the world. This story was broken by Damian Carrington at The Guardian and also Eduardo Garcia at Tree Hugger. And what we found was that as of when State of the Free Press 2022 went to press, no corporate news outlets had covered the IMF report. Part of what Eduardo Garcia describes here is how when governments subsidize fossil fuel industries, and here we're talking about both direct subsidies, outright kind of payments, but also indirect subsidies, things like not holding fossil fuel corporations responsible for the costs of their doing business, what in economics are known as externalities, because the corporation that's making the money externalizes the costs of doing business to some other third party. When governments don't tax, say, fossil fuels enough to produce revenues, the consequences are higher taxes in other areas, increased government deficits, and decreased spending on public goods. So the ripple effects of these subsidies, in terms of, as one expert noted, propping up a failing industry, to what it means for social programs in our communities, couldn't be much more profound.
And of course, we need to be ensuring that or incentivizing the phasing out of fossil fuels. Subsidies do the exact opposite. Another story in the Project Censored State of the Free Press 2023 that has got much less attention in the corporate media is who is actually doing the generating carbon emissions. We just had a wrap up of a major global UN conference on climate change, the Conference of Parties on Climate Change that took place in Egypt. And tell me what your book also covered in terms of how wealthy nations are continuing to drive the emissions, even though the corporate media might want you to believe it's India and China.
Right. Yeah, exactly, Sonali. This is another story in our top 25 list this year, reporting from Sonia Klinsky at The Conversation and also Tawanda Karambo at Quartz Africa. The key upshot is that about 5% of the world's population is responsible for more than a third of global greenhouse gas emissions. This will not be a surprise to regular listeners to this program, but wealthier nations such as the United States, Canada, and Australia are releasing on average, hundreds of times of greenhouse gas emissions per capita compared to the countries in the world, in continental Africa, in the South Pacific, that are bearing the heaviest brunt of these emissions and the consequences of the climate crisis. This is actually a story. We had a debate, and we had an internal debate about this story when the voting process took place this spring, whether we ought to include this story, because it basically duplicates a story we covered in last year's yearbook, how climate debtor nations have colonized the atmosphere, which was our number four story in the State of the Free Press 2022 yearbook, our last yearbook. But we agreed that both the scope of the problem, which is existential in scope, right? We're talking about the future of the planet here. And also the truly shocking quality that corporate news media have not covered these issues. They have not covered the differences. So we do hear about climate change, but we don't hear about differences in the global north and the global south and these relationships of debtor and creditor when it comes to who is putting greenhouse gases into the environment and who is paying for the consequences of that. So we know when we did the story research this year, we agreed this was such an important story that even though it's, quote, in some ways the same story as a story we ran last year, we would run it again. It's also worth updating in the sense that corporate news outlets, major U.S. corporate news outlets, so places like the New York Times and Time Magazine, are beginning to cover, to some extent, environmental racism within the United States. But we're still not seeing coverage that thinks about environmental racism as a geo-global issue.
Right.
And this story about wealthy nations driving climate change with devastating impacts on poorer countries is an example of the kind of reporting that we ought to that ought to be commonplace whenever a climate is talked about, but is, as best our research can determine, still something that is a kind of a perspective brought by independent journalists rather than their corporate counterparts.
If you're just tuning in, my guest is Andy Lee Roth, Associate Director of Project Censored, and we're talking about the latest State of the Free Press 2023, which he has co-edited with Mickey Huff. There are numerous stories that more than two dozen stories that have not gotten the coverage that they deserve and yet are so critical to social justice and to things like the environment. Let's talk about another topic that was a bit of a theme through the book, and that is the impact of what's known as dark money. You had three stories out of 25 on dark money. The first one basically on how it undermines democracy here in the United States. What is dark money, Andy?
So dark money refers to donations intended to sway political decisions. So everything from elections to Supreme Court nominations. But these donations, dark money refers to the idea that the donations, where the money is coming from, what in effect the money trail is not publicly knowable. It's hidden from the public. So the idea would be that dark money is influencing political decisions in favor of these unknown entities, individuals or groups that have agendas, but those agendas aren't necessarily in the public's interest. But the public has no awareness of where this money is coming from. So that influence is ultimately counter-democratic. It undermines democracy.
And so what this particular story about how dark money is undermining democracy here in the United States, give me a sense of it, because if you don't know where the money is coming from, you don't know what the agenda is. And these days with rising inequality, there are, you know, billionaires, there are wealthy corporate CEOs and corporations, institutions and individuals that have very different interests and goals and motivations than the public, the rest of the public at large, right? So how is dark money impacting our democracy? And again, this is not a new problem.
No. I mean, there's always been influence of wealth on the democratic process. The angle here, I think, is the new angle here, or the relatively new angle here, is the hidden quality of the influence at work. And the way, I'll say a little bit more about Igor Dersh's report for Salon, which was focused on Supreme Court nominations, and how organizations such as the Judicial Crisis Network, the Federalist Society, and the 85 Fund have been channeling money into, in effect, the kind of almost like electoral campaigns for the latest string of Supreme Court justices. And so this isn't just reporting from Salon. That report is in turn based on a study done by Open Secrets that found, for instance, that the Judicial Crisis Network had invested literally millions of dollars in supporting the Supreme Court nominations of Gorsuch, Kavanaugh, and Barrett. When you think about
six right-wing judges on the justices on the Supreme Court right now, and really have made a huge difference to the political landscape, unfortunately.
Absolutely. And when you think about how politicized those nomination processes have become, how openly politicized they are, now we have this subterranean input of there are millions of dollars in dark money coming in, also shaping attempting to shape, I guess I should say, the public's perception of who these people are and what kind of role they'll play when they enter the court. So that is one component of it. But one of our other stories that links up to this is how across the nation, states are passing laws that will make it even harder to disclose dark money influence on our political process.
And let's talk about that aspect of it. New laws, the title of this is New Laws Preventing Dark Money Disclosures Sweep the Nation. And it's one out of 25 stories in Project Censored's State of the Free Press 2023, co-edited by Mickey Huff and my guest, Andy Lee Roth. So we're seeing these laws that are cropping up, laws that are often, well, you tell me what kind of laws they are, but they are, I guess, suffice it to say, regressive. Right.
The goal of the law is so dark money is by definition has these non-disclosed elements. We don't know where the money is coming from, who or what organization is seeking to influence. This legislation that we're seeing crop up in states across the country is actually legislation that will create loopholes in existing laws to make it even more difficult to disclose the influence of dark money on the political process. The model legislation here comes from, perhaps no surprise, none other than ALEC, the American Legislative Exchange Council. Their model legislation has either been adopted or is under consideration in something like 17 states. I won't read them all, but from Oklahoma and Arizona and Mississippi to West Virginia, Arkansas, Iowa, North Carolina, South Dakota, and Florida. States at the time, State of the Free Press 2023 went to press. Some 17 states were either had passed or were in the process of legislating on changes to their laws, state laws, that would in effect make dark money disclosures that much harder to disclose. So this is really a kind of a throttling down of the public's right to know, right? First, dark money, as we've been discussing, compromises the democratic process, and it undermines public faith in government and election processes. And then state legislators, following the models of this conservative organization, are in the process of passing laws to make it even harder to kind of pry open this dark money dynamic. That's a dangerous scenario. And again, one that is in our top 25 story list this year, because when we researched it, we found no substantial corporate news coverage of of these laws as a kind of as a wave sweeping the nation. Right.
Let's wrap up our conversation discussing another story centered on dark money and how it fuels transphobic opposition to the Equal Rights Initiative Amendment, rather, and Equality Act. Tell me about this. Transphobia as a favorite pastime of today's modern conservative movement, unfortunately. What does this story uncover?
Well, so just to back up for a minute, the Equality Act would amend the 1964 Civil Rights Act to prohibit discrimination based on sex, sexual orientation, or gender identity. And of course, the Equal Rights Amendment, the ERA, is a policy designed to ensure equal rights for all citizens, regardless of sex or gender. As Truthout reported in March of this year, major groups that have been opposing the ERA and the Equality Act, often on transphobic grounds, so groups like the Eagle Forum, the Concerned Women for America, and the Independent Women's Forum, all of which have been opposing the ERA and the Equality Act, all are receiving dark money. We know that, for instance, again, it's difficult, like the investigative journal, this is why we need independent investigative journalism, is to try to track down and pry open these money channels, these hidden money channels. So what Julia Peck, Ansev Demirhan, and Alyssa Bowen at Truthout found when they dug a little bit was that the funders of the Eagle Forum and its related Eagle Forum Education and Legal Defense Fund had received tens of thousands of dollars over a period of several years from places like the Bradley Foundation and other massive foundations that have deep connections to the far right in the United States. So we're talking about, you know, groups associated with billionaire Charles Koch, the Center to Protect Patients' Rights, et cetera, et cetera. The IWF, one of these groups lobbying against the ERA, they're very much continuing in the, I guess, time dishonored tradition of Phyllis Schlafly. Yeah. Was initially founded as the Women for Clarence Thomas back when Thomas was embattled Supreme Court nomination hearings of Clarence Thomas. And this group rose to Thomas's defense when he was charged by Anita Hill with allegations of sexual harassment.
Well, that says plenty.
Yeah. So at Project Censored, we're always trying to look at, well, what's the corporate, you know, and Sonali, you started by saying, well, are these stories simply not reported? We found, for instance, over the last year or two, there's been more and more reporting in places like the Washington Post, NBC News, the New York Times, major U.S. news establishment outlets. We have seen coverage about the rise of anti-trans legislation in states across the country and efforts at the federal level. But what we found when we researched this story about dark money fueling this kind of transphobic opposition to the ERA and the Equality Act was that that's an angle of this story that is just utterly missing from the kind of establishment and legacy news media.
Well, I want to thank you so much, Andy, for joining us today. People can get their own copies of the book at most bookstores, and is there a website?
Yes, projectcensored.org. We have an archive of all 47 years of the project's top 25 story lists at projectcensored.org.
Thank you so much again, and good luck to you.
Thank you, Sonali.
My guest has been Andy Lee Roth, Associate Director of Project Censored. He coordinates the project's validated independent news program and has co-edited several editions of the Censored Yearbook with Mickey Huff, including the new book State of the Free Press 2023. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. You can access this and other interviews on our website, risingupwithsonali.com. By becoming a subscriber, find our audio podcast on iTunes and Spotify, and follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at RU with Sonali.